Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host and the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. We are 1 week away from show number 750. The big anniversary is next week. I'm glad you're with us. I'd be stricken with heterometropia if I saw that you missed this week's show. Here's our associate producer, Kate, to introduce it.
Hey, Tony. Our 25 NTC coverage continues with your intergenerational people pipeline. Arya Ma wants you to create a culture that welcomes and empowers team members across the generations. She shares her wisdom on knowledge transfer, pathways for growth regardless of seniority, using tech to build your talent pipeline, mentorship, fun cross-generational training, inclusive professional development, and more. Arya is founder of Lunera. On Tony's Take Two.
The mostly bad budget bill.
Here is your intergenerational people pipeline.
Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 25 NTC, the 2025 Nonprofit Technology Conference. We are together in community at the Baltimore Convention Center. Our coverage is sponsored by Heller Consulting, software and technology for nonprofits. With me now is Arya Ma. Arya is founder and principal consultant at Lunera. And Arya, welcome.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here, Tony.
Pleasure. I'm glad to have you with us. And your topic is design an intergenerational people pipeline for sustainable long-term growth. We have plenty of time together, but just give me like a high-level view of the topic.
Sure. So I am a Gen Zer, and I do people fundraising consulting for nonprofits. And one of the biggest things, challenges that we're seeing right now with more than four generations in the workforce is lack of communication, miscommunication within workforces, because there are different value systems that are being held by different people from different generations. And this is impacting productivity and progress in a lot of these nonprofits' objectives. So I go over value systems, frameworks and tools that people can use in their organizations to help bring everyone onto the same page, no matter their generation and no matter their value system.
Awesome. Perfect. Perfect overview. Well, you and I are representing two of the generations. I'm sure it's very difficult for you to guess which generation I might be a part of. So you have no idea that I'm a baby boomer, but young baby boomer. Yes. 1962.
Whoa. That's,
so
that's
young baby boomer. Yeah, I sure. Almost qualify millennial, but not quite.
It's on the cusp.
No, you're being kind. Thank you very much. No, I own it. I'm a baby boomer, but a young baby boomer. I don't know if I mentioned that. Young. So we're representing half the generations in the workforce.
Right now, exactly.
All right, so we're seeing, let's start with, I kind of consider this a threshold, like the purpose. What different generations come to work for different purposes, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What do you see across? Do you see that, first of all, just like why we work, mm-hmm. what we want to get out of work,
for sure,
across differing across generations.
Yeah. For sure.
Share your thinking there.
I think one big thing right now is coming into the workforce and the financial plane that we're on right now, why Gen Zers are working and how hard it is to find a job, especially in the nonprofit sector. And I think as we're going into work, there are different value systems from different generations about how hard you should be working, how long you should be working, and the responsibilities that you should be holding. Gen Z is very big on a work-life balance and still being productive. And there are, you know, the technology barriers and differences on like how specific tasks should be done. Whereas the older generations, pulling up by the bootstraps, working really hard past the 9-to-5, doing what you have to do to climb that ladder. So there are very different ideas on what people should be doing and how much energy they should be putting in into the work that they are doing. For example, Gen Zers, they see their work as solely their work. And then once, 5 o'clock hits, they're doing something else. They're turning the computer off, whereas for other generations that might be a different idea. Right now,
can you break it down into that's Gen Z?
Mm-hmm.
Can you represent Gen X, millennials?
Mm-hmm.
And you're welcome to represent baby boomers, and I'll tell you if it resonates with me or not.
Yeah.
Can you get that specific?
Yeah. So for millennials, it's kind of the same thing, but also right now, by 2030, about 75% of the workforce will be mainly millennials. So right now, we're seeing a lot more of this communication problem impact them.
Okay, wait, by 2030, 75% will be millennial.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's only a few, well, several years away, but not that many.
Not that many.
Okay.
And what's really hard is for those who are on the cusp of Gen Zers, millennials, we call them Zillennials. And
okay,
they are the ones that still value that work-life balance, but are struggling to find a job that will help, that will keep them stable financially, that will give them financial stability. They're looking to buy houses, they're looking to advance their careers, but they can't find that right now in the job market with how competitive it is and how hard it is and how inflation is increasing but wages are not increasing.
Yeah. All right. And then how about strict millennials? What's their value statement?
Strict millennials, I would say, kind of hold the same work-life balance sentiments, but they are also looking to climb the ladder, maybe a little bit differently than Gen Zers. They're looking for more mentorship. But millennials, right now, we're not seeing a lot of mid-career stage people in the workforce. We're seeing a lot of older folks and a lot of younger folks. But in the nonprofit world, there's this gap that's missing of mid-career people who are looking to do more professional development, go to conferences that can support the nonprofit even further.
Millennials have some frustration too with baby boomers, right? Isn't there, you know, okay, move over. Okay, boomer, you know, you've had your time. You fucked it up bad enough. You know, now it's time for, it's the next generation.
What's rough is that a lot of baby boomers / like Gen Xers are having a hard time letting go. They have very traditional ideas of how their program should be run or how their company should be run. And, you know, Gen Zs, millennials, they want to, you know, use all this new technology. They want to improve, you know, systems. They want to use Notion and, like, do asynchronous Zoom meetings. And whereas, you know, the older folks have this idea of more meetings. It's fine if meetings go over a little bit. They value, like, in person. So there's this communication value difference in how work should be done. And so baby boomers are reluctant to pass that torch on because those value systems are different. How work should be done right now.
Am I misspeaking? So from the oldest, it's baby boomer, then millennial, no?
It's baby boomer, Gen X.
Oh,
yeah.
I've been saying,
mm-hmm.
Okay. You're educating me. Yeah. So, okay, boomer. You know, you don't even know what the generations are. I'm surprised you even know which one you're in. At least you identified that correctly. But
yeah.
You didn't get much further than that. Okay. So it goes baby boomer, Gen X, millennial,
mm-hmm.
Z.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Oh, you did say Zillennial, too.
Yeah, Zillennial. So that's like.
That's the Gen Z millennial. I should have picked that.
Yeah. That's right. Like the people who are on the cusp. They're
right.
Like the millennials,
right.
Who don't want to be called millennials, but don't want to be called Zoomers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Zoomers.
Yeah.
That's the next one.
No,
okay.
Well, Zoomers are Gen Zers.
Gen Z.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of names.
That's right.
There's a lot
of
names.
Of course, right. Gen Z would not blend with boomer. Okay. All right. All right. So, yeah, different purposes for work, different expectations too around,
mm-hmm.
like you're saying, hours,
mm-hmm.
boundaries,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That does resonate with me in terms of, I'm not going to speak for any other generations because
mm-hmm.
I don't have coworkers. I'm in my business
mm-hmm.
by myself.
Mm-hmm.
All the relationships I have are client relationships.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't really, you know, I see them as a client relationship.
Right.
I don't
right.
see them day in and day out.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
employees. So I'm only going to speak from my own perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have fewer boundaries. You know,
mm-hmm.
I would say life and work are intertwined inextricably.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes I don't start work till 10:30 because I've been to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
But other mornings I may start early and I might, even still, if I start early, I might work till 6:30 or 7 or 7:30
mm-hmm.
or something
mm-hmm.
and have a late dinner and I might even pick up something afterwards.
Yeah.
Sit down at my desk for an hour later.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to make it sound like I work 18 hours a day either. There might be a day where I only work like 3 or 4
hours. For sure. And I think also that's another thing that comes into the differences is the younger generations, they value more flexibility. They're looking at more remote work. And the older folks, they're kind of used to being in the office. They like being in the office. Yeah. And they like that they like that structure a little bit more. And so we're seeing differences in how people like to work. So there are, you know, you have companies that say the remote model doesn't work. The hybrid model works better, but a lot of people are trying to go back to office to really keep that company culture cohesive. Because right now, one of the biggest issues in remote teams, you know, whether or not you have an intergenerational people team or not, is company culture, and that can really affect productivity.
Yeah, but also remote work improves productivity.
It can, right? Yeah.
We have research.
Yes.
I've had guests citing it.
Mm-hmm.
The remote work did make people more productive.
For sure.
After the early stages, the very early stages of the pandemic.
For sure, yes. I think also people are looking towards finding more community, and that can be a little bit harder in remote work cultures because hosting, you know, virtual events, that kind of thing, it doesn't have the same like pizzazz as being in person, you know? So I think we're seeing also more people craving that in-person connection in the workplace or out of the workplace.
There isn't a substitute for being face-to-face, mm-hmm, real life.
Mm-hmm.
But companies can do it if they're intentional.
For sure.
It could be a virtual company or hybrid company,
mm-hmm,
and just be intentional, yep, about bringing people back together. Not just once a year.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be 3-4 times a year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies that are remote, they'll do in-person retreats once a year that do substitute, you know, that in-person need, where they are paying for, you know, this weekend where everyone in the company is getting together and getting to know each other face to face. And then throughout the rest of the year, they feel more comfortable. Their psychological safety is built to where they're more comfortable than working online when you've met somebody in person.
You get to know them.
It's
just not the same. It's not the same. As good as good or valuable as Zoom is,
mm-hmm,
it's not the same as, mm-hmm, being in person. Opening up the conversation, getting to know someone's background, mm-hmm, family, you know, I mean, there's just no substitute.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I believe.
Yeah.
All right. I'm glad to. All right. So we agree.
Yeah.
All right, there we go. All right.
Generations coming together.
All right. All right. Let's bring us together again another way. Your session description talks about information transfer,
mm-hmm,
knowledge,
mm-hmm,
transfer.
Knowledge transfer.
Yes. Boomers have a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Gen X has a fair amount. Mm-hmm. And they've been in the,
mm-hmm,
workplace decades,
mm-hmm,
as well.
Mm-hmm.
What are your issues and what are your thinking? What's your thinking around this knowledge transfer?
Yeah. So in the session, I go over a couple different frameworks. One of the biggest ones is Simon Sinek's theory of why. So one really big problem right now in communicating with each other across departments, one big question in the group was, how can we bridge these teams together, marketing and events and fundraising? How do we bring them together? And there's a big issue there where they're kind of siloed. They don't really talk to each other that much. They don't really know what each other's doing. Because talking about what you're doing and how you're doing it is really boring. So we have to come back to the why are you doing it? That is like the main thing that everyone in the organization has in common. Why are you here in this organization helping increase accessibility to housing, increasing accessibility to food? Why are you here? Not, you know, because you want to do it, but like, what is your personal story and your background? It always comes back to why, because when we all have different values, for example, baby boomers might think about legacy and Gen Xers might think about impact. If we can bring those values together to something like lasting change, then that is the why of these two generations that had different values, but you bring together a shared why. And when you bring together a shared why, that puts all the other frameworks into place. You look at communication, you looked at more recognition profiling, how can you increase each other's understanding of each other so that communication is much better, so that you are more open to each other having different ways of doing things, that you're giving each other the benefit of the doubt. So that's one of the big things that I was talking about in the session yesterday, is how can you introduce introduce the why for your employees and have them work together to create a shared mission. So then you guys might have different ways of doing things, but at least you know you're on the same page. You're all here for one purpose. And once you are on the same page about that, then you're much more open to each other's differences.
Brilliant, brilliant. All right, so let's answer that question, because for nonprofit radio listeners who were not in your session, how can you start to build this culture of a shared why?
So one of the things I talked about is having, you know, a session, a quick session where everyone's writing, you know, their top five values on like a sticky note. And then you put that sticky note, it can be a virtual like board, like on Miro, where it's a shared canvas, or you could do it in person, and you find out what values people have in common. So again, like I was saying, boomers might be, they might care more about legacy, and zoomers might care more about impact. So that comes together as lasting change, right? So we find what overlaps, and then we figure out, okay, who is good at doing what? Is this person better at managing people, and this person is better at managing operations or like documents? Okay, so then we bring together one person from each generation that help each other with these different ways of doing things, so that people are first doing what they are good at, but they're also, there's a shared ownership of the project. One big thing right now I think we're seeing for the knowledge transfer issue is that Zoomers want a lot of more responsibility. They want to do more, but boomers are a little bit reluctant to pass that torch, you know, because sometimes the project is their baby, the business is their baby. They spent a lot of time building it up, and sometimes there's a little bit of reluctancy to pass that over. And sometimes there's this reluctancy of changing the status quo. But when we give shared ownership for everybody, for everyone to do what they're good at, and open that door for different generations to work on a specific project together, then there is that shared why again. Again, we build that psychological safety where it's not a personal thing against how you do things. It's not like, oh, you use Asana and I prefer, I don't know, Slack Canvas. You know, it's not a personal thing about differences in methodology, but rather we're looking at how can we best achieve the same shared goal and the shared why that we have. So there are things like non-compensational reward systems, the mirrored mentoring where you...
All right, okay, let's break these down.
Yeah.
About non-compensation reward systems, yeah.
So this could...
What are we rewarding? What behaviors are we rewarding?
We're looking at nonprofits that have a lot of volunteers. There might be high turnover. There might be high turnover because they don't feel like their work is being valued. They don't feel like they're being productive. So instead of rewarding them monetarily, you can reward them either, you know, Gen Zers who are looking for mentorship with growth opportunities, professional development opportunities. One thing I've seen that works very well in nonprofits is giving a ladder when a young person comes to volunteer. You know, there's really high turnover for volunteers because they don't feel like they're being taken care of. So they'll go somewhere else and they'll find out how they can do more productive things somewhere else. So when you introduce a ladder of growth, let's say you stay on for 6 months and then you're put into like the professional development fund, you get like a set amount of money that you could, you know, take this course, earn their certification, and that is a non-compensational reward system, so like non-monetary. For older folks who are looking to pass the torch, or who are not looking to like immediately retire, or are looking to climb higher, you can add mentorship stipends, so they are more likely to be open to mentoring the next generation who's coming in. So those are some frameworks for just increasing that innate desire to help each other, not with money, but by knowledge transfer.
Is Gen X any more willing to share and relinquish authority than baby boomers?
I think right now what we're seeing is millennials and Gen X is still trying to climb up the ladder. But they have more experience and they have more knowledge. And so they're finding, they're still in the same boat as Gen Zers, but they need more, right? Because Gen Zers, they will work long hours for lower pay. And that's an issue that we're seeing is like students who are coming right out of college, they will be paid, you know, peanuts and they're fine with it because they don't have that experience in like quotations. But millennials and Gen Xers, they have a lot of experience, but they expect to be paid for their experience, which they should be. But a lot of like these big corporations, they're hiring students right out of college to do very menial tasks that Gen Xers and millennials can do, but they will do for lower pay.
And that translates to the nonprofit community as well?
It does.
Seeing that there?
It does. And a really big issue right now for people in the session was talking about how there's not a lot of mid-career professionals, like because Gen Xers and millennials are looking outside of the nonprofit industry to find out where they can put their experiences and get the compensation that they deserve.
It's time for Tony's Take Two.
Thank you, Kate. The budget bill was passed by Congress and it was signed into law on July 4th. It's mostly bad. This was, of course, the one that was the one big, beautiful bill, which I call a big, burdensome budget bill. There's a lot that's bad in it for our nonprofit community. Like, there are drastic reductions in social safety net programs like SNAP and Medicaid that provide food and medical assistance, and that's going to mean increased demand for the services that our folks who do that kind of work, you know, feeding, housing, mental health, physical healthcare is going to see big increases in demand for those types of services. There are funding cuts for specific members of the community, like the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and Harvard University. And that, of course, raises the question, which nonprofit or which sector of the community is going to be the next domino to fall, which disfavored, you know, not in the good graces, not following the regime's line on whatever issue you work in, you could be next, or not only your individual nonprofit, but your sector of the community. Maybe ballet falls out of favor. This bill also adds a charitable deduction minimum for your donors who itemize their taxes. And that's 0.5% of adjusted gross income. So only charitable gifts above that minimum are going to be deductible now. So if you give less than 0.5% of your adjusted gross income to charity, it's not deductible. There are some bright spots. We did get removed the unilateral authority of the Secretary of the Treasury. Remember, there was a provision that the Secretary could designate nonprofits, individual nonprofits, as terrorist supporting organizations. That got removed, thankfully. There is a $1,000 charitable deduction allowance for your donors who don't itemize. And that's about 90% of taxpayers don't itemize their taxes each year. And so there's a new allowance for them to take a charitable deduction. So that's a bright spot. And they also removed the excise tax provision, which was going to apply to the most high net worth private foundations. That excise tax will not be there. So some bright spots there. You should be reassured that our voice makes a difference. Your voice made a difference. We wouldn't have gotten these onerous provisions removed, the unilateral authority, the Secretary of the Treasury, and the excise tax on the wealthy private foundations would not have been removed if we hadn't advocated for it. Because Congress wasn't going to do it on their own. A lot of them admitted they didn't even read the bill, know what was in it. So your voice matters. And I'm encouraging you to continue talking up. Let your elected representatives hear from you when there is something that burdens your nonprofit or the nonprofit community at large, because we are all in this together, and we are so much stronger when we are united as the American nonprofit community. So please keep speaking up. It makes a difference. And that is Tony's take two. Kate?
That was a really good empowerment speech at the end. I felt like motivated, you know, to say something.
All right. Well, good. Now's your chance. What do you want to say?
I want to say that we've got buku buttloads more time. Here's the rest of your intergenerational people pipeline with Aria Ma.
Suppose I don't let you off the hook. What would you say about what I said?
I would say that I have to work on, like the congressman, I don't read into enough of the bills that are being passed. And I have to do better to educate myself and look at the news, look at these bills, because there's so much like disappointment in my heart with like what's going on right now politically. But that like disappointment and that rage, it's not backed up with enough facts. So yeah, I feel like I don't have a lot of, like, I don't have the place to say because I'm not fully educated on it. So I felt bad saying anything.
Well, so you can get educated.
Yeah.
You can. There are lots of legitimate news sources that are open to you. I can point you to some.
Thank you. I like looking at is it BBC?
BBC is a very good one. Yeah. British Broadcasting. Yeah. Then get an outside perspective. Absolutely. Get a foreign perspective of American news. That's a very good idea. All right.
Anything else about knowledge transfer?
One thing we did in the session was we went over a case study after we went over frameworks and tools that people could use. And really, it was a way to split the group up into like kind of half of the room. And we started out with them going over their why. Why are they working for the organization? Introducing themselves, and then going over the case study. But the idea of that case study session was really to give them an example of what a knowledge sharing session looks like and how they can incorporate it into their own organizations. So they talked a lot about the frameworks and tools that I provided, but they also introduced their own expertise of their personal experiences from their respective organizations and what has worked and what hasn't worked. And that's one big thing. I think it's a huge problem in nonprofit industry is that there's a lack of communication between nonprofits of, like, you know, the same industry, and a lot of people rebuilding a wheel that doesn't work.
Can you share some of these, what didn't work and what did work? Or maybe one of each?
Yeah, so let's see.
I want to give Nonprofit Radio listeners the full,
for sure,
full experience of your session without having been there. As full as we can do.
For sure. Let me think. So the case study was just about how Gen Z have, you know, Gen Z and baby boomers, they had different ideas of how to engage the customer base. Gen Zs want to do more social media management. Baby boomers liked emails and in-person events. So it was basically the case study was like, you are tasked with how can we change this tension from tension to collaboration between the generations. So one person was talking about how what worked well for them when they were figuring out their people pipeline is giving each other the benefit of the doubt and setting that standard in the organization. I think it's really easy for people to think it's personal when someone shoots down your idea. When we set that standard of giving each other the benefit of the doubt and giving each other grace, one person was saying that was a huge change to morale.
Like, presume good intention.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Because I think, especially right now, Gen Zers are looking for ways to improve their ability to accept feedback and give feedback. I think our generation is super anxious about that particular thing. Like, we're very eager to please and very anxious to please. So accepting feedback and receiving feedback is, I think, a huge part of how older generations could help Gen Zers. One thing that wasn't working for the People Pipeline, let me think, how can I put this into words, was that they found that social media engagement was not working with their audience. And I kind of jumped in here because social media is not the medium for everything, even though social media engagement is a huge part of how people are getting their news and like how they engage with the world right now. If you are working with people who are facing food insecurity or who have a love for environmental conservation and they are not on Instagram but they're on Facebook, then maybe you shouldn't be spending a lot of time on Instagram and you should be spending more time on Facebook. It's a lot of these little things that require knowing who your audience is, which is such a... it's such a cliche thing to say, but it's...
No, you do have to meet people. I've had lots of guests, even just here at NTC, saying you have to meet people where they are.
Yeah.
You do. You're not going to convert them to communicate with you somewhere else.
Yeah.
If you want to talk to them, talk, and, you know, metaphorically, you gotta go where they are.
And I think... in terms of how to do that is you really need to talk to people in your life first. Talk to people in your network. And I was telling a lot of people that you should be on LinkedIn and see what people are doing on there, how other people from different industries, not even the nonprofit sector. I think a really big thing is that philanthropy needs to learn from business and how people network within that world and how people talk to each other and how they can learn from good things that are working in the business world. Because a lot of it transfers over to the nonprofit industry, especially maintaining relationships outside of your sector. I think also a big thing for improving people pipelines that I learned a lot from entrepreneurship is talking to people who are not in your sector. If you're in food insecurity, talk to somebody who's working in housing insecurity. Talk to somebody who's working in improving access to healthcare for women. Like, really talk to people outside of your industry to figure out what's working and what's not. And most importantly, talk to people who are in organizations that have about the same budget and same number of people on your team, because that is really what will improve your systems and your operations, not another nonprofit that's working in the same industry as you.
That's interesting. The parallel is, as you're advocating within the organization, talk to people in the other generation.
Exactly.
You know, like baby boomers, my older peers, don't be afraid of, you know, the folks who just graduated from college,
mm-hmm.
or 25 or 26.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and what you're suggesting, Aria, has great value too. If you're coming together around shared values,
mm-hmm.
around a shared purpose for working together,
mm-hmm.
You have something to talk about.
Exactly.
And then you can build from there.
One,
so there's an analogous on the micro level. You're suggesting, you know, talking outside your sector.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just repeating what you said.
No.
Just making an analogy.
Yeah, yeah. I think another really great way to engage collaboration and just people and just get people talking is mirrored mentoring, where you pair a younger...
What did you call it?
Mirrored mentoring. Mirrored mentoring.
Mentoring. Okay, what is that?
When you,
jail,
yeah, I don't really know if this is like a real thing, but
no,
this is how,
yeah,
it's when you pair someone from a younger generation with someone from an older generation and you have them teach each other different things.
Oh, they're both helping each other.
Exactly.
Okay, not
instead
one
of
way.
Instead yeah, of having yeah. the older folk try and mentor, you know, how
one
to
way.
Run this business, because
right.
then it just feels one way. It feels like you're not really getting anything out of it if you're, you know, a baby boomer, if you're a Gen X. You want to build that relationship, and it's really about relationships and giving, not just taking. So I think a lot of programs that are asking, you know, baby boomers, Gen Xers to mentor the next generation, obviously, we want them to do it out of their own innate need, but also we can provide something back. We can teach, you know,
yeah.
things about technology,
yeah.
how people
Absolutely.
Are doing
I was just thinking,
things.
Yes, I'll teach you how to run this nonprofit. You teach me how to share a video. I know. This is coming from the person who I helped share last night. We have reached a climax though.
Yeah.
We've reached a bottleneck.
Yeah.
Let's say. All right. Yeah. No. Okay. Mirrored mentoring makes very good sense. Mm-hmm. Yes. We all can. I mean, it's just. It goes back to your fundamental premise that we can all learn from each other.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of the things that I was talking about in, you know, the workshop and also here is very intuitive, but it's very hard to do in practice because it does require a level of cooperation from everyone in the organization to try out something new. And so one thing I was saying in the workshop is, make this a premise that we are trying something new. Thank you for your patience, and we are open to how things are going. If it's not working, tell us if it's not working. You know, mirrored mentorship might not be for an organization. Maybe non-compensational reward systems doesn't work if you have a lot of volunteers. Like, you have to try these things out, but being very communicative to your employees or your volunteers is super important, and being grateful for their time and energy as well.
Excellent. You have really savvy advice on a higher level, but then you also got a lot of tactics too. Valuable. Okay. You got more time, right?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. You talk a little bit about bottlenecks, or your session description refers to bottlenecks.
Mm-hmm.
How do you identify what bottlenecks are? Well, first, what kind of bottleneck are we talking about?
So I classify bottlenecks as two things. One is operational, so something within the processes that is really hiccuping people able to pass it on to the next person or their work on to the next person to get it to progress further. The second bottleneck, I would say, is psychological or emotional, and that's what I was talking about in terms of the shared why. When you build a shared why, you are tearing down that barrier, that emotional boundary of like protecting yourself and your defenses against, oh, I'm doing this because X, Y, and Z. This is why during the session, during our case study session, I had people introduce not what they do, but like why they're in it. I heard really great stories about how one person's working in improving education for first generation students because they're first generation and they did not realize how lacking their educational system was when they were growing up. So when you share your personal stories with a bunch of strangers in the room, you lower that barrier of information. You're more willing to provide information, and that increases the value of the knowledge sharing that's happening. So that is the emotional and psychological bottleneck, I would say, is generations don't really know how to talk to each other. They don't know how to joke with each other. They don't know where the barrier is for each other because their own values are different. I would say for Zoomers, they're like 5 o'clock hits. I'm not expected to answer any emails. For older generations, they're used to answering emails past that 5 o'clock timeline, right? So they don't know how to communicate with each other and like set that boundary or compromise that boundary with each other. So when we lower that bottleneck that and provide psychological safety within the workplace, people are much more open to communicating with each other. The second,
you got a little bit of a mixed metaphor there, lowering the bottleneck.
I
made fun of myself. You don't mind.
I think another thing, in the workplace, and this has to do with community, is like bantering, right? I think bantering is very healthy, and it's part of how you can build more productive relationships.
Yeah, let's talk more about that. That sounds interesting.
Bantering, yeah. So like, it's the same thing as joking around, but being able to poke fun at yourself and poke fun at like your coworkers. Like, I have this one coworker who loves using M dashes, and there's like this new thing going around where it's like it's definitely AI generated if you use an M dash, you know. So it's like something I poke fun at her, but I know she doesn't. She's not like copy pasting AI generated stuff, but being able to poke fun and being comfortable with poking fun. I had memes in my presentation. I think it's really important to lower, again, that psychological barrier because you're just more open to communicating with someone when you're laughing together. And
can I give a little bit of advice there?
Yeah.
The way you could start is by poking fun at yourself.
Yeah, for sure.
Because when you do that, nobody can be offended.
Yeah.
So you make fun of yourself one or two times in a jovial, you know, and then the person is a little more open. Oh, he's humble enough to recognize, you know, he's got issues, and then you can broaden it a little bit. and people are a little more receptive.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I think that that is also what's missing in these intergenerational teams is just, especially if you're asynchronous or remote, things get lost, you know, in just messages. So I think GIFs, I don't know how some people pronounce it.
Yeah, I hear it both ways. Right.
they're a great way to just add some spice into the conversation and just let people know that, like, okay, sometimes really just means okay, and it's not passive aggressive. You know, there's just these little things in remote culture that can affect those interpersonal relationships. So any way you can lower and introduce laughter and just curiosity is a great way to help continue improving those relationships.
That kind of leads to something else I wanted to ask you about. Mm-hmm. Fun. You refer to fun mm-hmm. cross-generational training.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we're talking about mm-hmm. now? Or do you have some specific strategies around training? Yeah.
So I talk a little bit about rituals in my workshop. And this refers to things that people can expect once they reach a milestone, once the team finishes a project. So this can look like a two-hour Friday lunch where you're getting paid just to hang out and be with each other and celebrate that success. And it could also look like guided meditation, anything that improves the wellness of everybody in the organization. And this is how you invest in your employees and in your volunteers. When they feel like they're being taken care of and their well-being is placed first. And
now they're doing something in community that isn't work-related.
Exactly.
We're already breaking down the barriers of strict work relationship. And we're going a little beyond. We're doing it. It's still a work group.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing something social mm-hmm. and wellness-related, mm-hmm. not strictly work-related.
Yes. And, you know, you can do this in remote teams as well. There are, like, some integrations in Slack where you can do water cooler chats, for example, and they're just, you know, an automated question. Like, if you could have a superpower, but every time you use a superpower, there would be like some kind of a side effect. What would it be, right? So it's like these fun things that just introduce a different side of the workplace. But in terms of training, I was talking a little bit about retreats. Retreats are so important, I think, if you have a smaller team or if you're in an asynchronous team, again, to bring those people together and see where communication flatlines and how you can improve that. Another thing that I also talked about was a circle up hierarchy. So instead of top down, like Gens, baby boomers and Gen X's, you know, giving orders. It's rather a collaborative effort in a team meeting. Some people are given, you know, responsibility over talking about this agenda item. Other people are given responsibility about talking the other agenda items instead of, you know, just the older folks lecturing and going over agenda items and Gen Z's just kind of just listening there. Yeah. So being able to, again, provide shared ownership of a project because you innately will put in more energy when you have more responsibility.
You give people agency.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
More collaborative mm-hmm. decision making,
mm-hmm.
maybe even more collaborative agenda building mm-hmm. around meetings. Mm-hmm. Okay. I love how you call it lecturing.
Sometimes it does feel like lecturing.
I'm sure it does. I'm back in college. I thought I graduated 2 years ago. What happened?
And then Gen Zers are, you know, sometimes just rambling on, and sometimes they can just be told, hey, let's move on. And they're, you know, when you again
we're
break
off
down.
Topic, Gen Z. Okay, Gen Z.
We can move on. Okay, we can move
on. Okay, Zoomer. It's time to move on now. A little different. A little spin on move on.
Yeah.
Okay, Zoomer. Let's get to the next item. Let's move ahead. All right. Anything else on the fun topics? Fun training? Anything else?
Fun training.
If not, you could say no. But
no, I'm just trying to think.
I want to give us the full experience.
For sure. That was it.
Okay. What else? Now I've peppered you because I'm the boomer, so I'm controlling the conversation. But no, it's understood. I'm the host. It's my job to keep things.
We're just yapping.
Forward. Yeah. What's on your agenda? What have we not talked about? Or maybe questions that arose from the session? What else you want to talk about? You want listeners to know around intergenerational people pipeline.
I kind of want to talk about how I ran the meeting because I think the way I do
it is...
No, we're not doing that.
What else you got? No, go ahead, please.
No, I mean, because I made it super interactive. I used this program called Mentimeter, where you basically scan a QR code and you can interact with the presenter. And in the beginning of every session, I always have a Mentimeter up where I ask people, what are you expecting to get out of this session? Because I hear a lot about people coming to workshops and not expecting it to be what it was and not expecting to get what they wanted out of it. And people's time is super important, especially when you're here at a conference. There's so many topics.
There are a lot of other choices.
There's a lot.
There's high opportunity costs.
Exactly. So you need to be very careful with people's time and you need to respect it and be grateful that they chose your workshop over everyone else's. And
one is Mentimeter?
Mentimeter.
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 And how is this different than just polling?
You can type questions into it. So, like, for example, you can have an option where, let's say, my question was, what do you want to get out of this workshop? And then you can scroll through everyone's questions individually, and that's how I got a sense of, okay, this is what everyone is thinking about trying to get out of the session. I'm going to pepper in answers to these specific questions as I go through the presentation. So I'm not just lecturing them. I'm being interactive with their time.
So now you took time to go through everybody's answers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How many people were in your session?
There are about 20 or 30.
Doesn't that take a few minutes though?
It does. So you have to be really good at time management. But I did. It was really quick, right? In the beginning, I believe like there were 10 questions specifically. So not everyone put something in, and some of them were reiterative. They were the same thing. And so, but at the same time, you have to remember these questions in the back of your head while you're going through the presentation. Yeah. So I'm sure I did not get through everything during the presentation. But again, that introduces a sense of collaboration, so they don't feel like they're just here listening to a lecture, right? And this is the same thing that you can do in your meetings. You know, one person was asking about how can you improve siloed teams when events and fundraising don't talk to each other, marketing, they're all working on 10 different projects at the same time. Not everyone knows what each other is doing. One great thing you can do is have, instead of like big team meetings that are an hour and a half long where no one is really listening to all of it. Yes. You have these 15 to 20 minute sessions from one person from each department every week, just going through what they're doing, and that's it. It's interactive. You just talk about what you're doing, ask if anyone has any questions related to the work they're currently doing and how they can support you. Again, being interactive and making it feel like people are not lecturing at you, whether or not you're Gen Z or you're a baby boomer or anyone in between. When you improve and introduce interactivity, people have more leverage. They have a higher stake in the conversation. So their energy level goes up and they're more interested in the conversation because they're waiting to have their question answered. They're waiting to hear, how can this improve my quality of life? So then we do a case study where everyone is then talking to each other. They're not just taking the frameworks and tools that I provided, but there was more than, you know, 50, 60 years of experience of different industries in that room, and people can learn so much by just talking to each other. And again, having that shared why and introducing your specific why, people's barriers lower down and they tell their own personal story, and then they knowledge share. At the end of the session, we went through another couple of just like three, I called it a collective audit. So now that we went through this case study, we've answered some questions collectively. What do we want to achieve in the short term and in the long term? And this is where people answered those questions and we helped each other answer those questions. So it wasn't just me speaking, it was also the people in the session helping each other, answering each other's questions. So when you introduce a level of collaborativity into your meetings, into the workplace, people have a stake in what the work that they're doing, and they're just more open to communicating with you, and they're much more open to giving you the benefit of the doubt. And that innately improves our human-to-human relationships, and it just improves productivity and retention for the long run.
I love it. The collectivity.
Mm-hmm.
The case study becomes a mere tool
for sharing
authority,
mm-hmm.
collective decision making,
mm-hmm.
conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Brilliant.
Another question I had was, how can you help people who don't talk that much, who are quiet, but not call out. Exactly. Yeah. And I said Mentimeter is a great way to do that because it is completely anonymous. I don't like the like, oh, I'm going to like call on you because you have your hand raised, because some people might not feel comfortable speaking in like large rooms, and that's completely okay. So again, the anonymous feedback makes it more accessible for everyone to provide their ideas, and it it brings everyone to the same level, that their ideas are the same. Because when you give everyone the same tool that they can use to provide their feedback and it's anonymous, they feel more comfortable sharing it.
Everybody's equal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Offering growth opportunities, like mm-hmm. maybe succession planning, mm-hmm. you know, regardless of seniority. You kind of touched on this a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
giving Zoomers agency.
Mm-hmm.
But can you say more about planning growth, professional growth within the organization, regardless of where you are?
Yeah. You know, for older folks, some people might be looking at phased retirement, so they might be looking at reduced hours over the course of a couple of years, or reduced ownership or responsibility of a specific project. And that's something that you have to be understanding of, like, immediately, of every year when you're doing whatever audit or self-reflection that they're turning into for their yearly review, is knowing what their goals are. And again, I know I keep saying psychological safety, but when people are open and they know your personal story, they're more open to telling you, I'm thinking about leaving in a couple of years, you know, and that is really important for planning. So improving that culture allows people to be more upfront about what their goals are. One big problem for Gen Zers and younger folks is they're jumping job to job, right? Because right now, they get a pay increase.
I don't see any growth opportunity.
No, right. They don't see any growth.
There's somebody who will pay me, you know, some. I hope not this little bit. Somebody will pay me $5,000 mm-hmm. a year more, mm-hmm. which is not that much. But at least maybe there's growth.
Yeah.
I see some growth potential
there.
They're at least talking about it.
Yeah.
And where I am now,
I feel
stuck.
Yeah. So when you give them, I see a lot of job postings and in interviews, people are saying, oh, there's a lot of growth here. And there's like nothing. There's talk of it afterwards. There's no follow-up.
Right.
So one big thing that I tell people is that you need this implemented into your department leads. Like, they need to know that these people are looking for growth, and retention saves so much money and time in the long run. You need to make this a business decision. All right. This isn't just like investing in the human that's working for you, but it's also investing in your own business, in your nonprofit, in your organization. You need to think about, how can you retain this person for the long run? So whether or not it is for younger folks to know that there is a lot of wellness opportunities, reimbursements, events that are investing in their mindfulness and lowering their probability of burnout is super important. And that is innately connected to growth. So then they know, okay, if I stay another
professional year. Professional development budgeting
Exactly. Yeah. Bringing people to these conferences and helping them, support them to continue upskilling, because they can learn more skills anywhere. They can, you know, take on additional projects. They can side hustle. They can whatever. And that means less time, less energy, and less mindfulness onto your organization.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you want to bring everybody, whatever you can provide for them, all the benefits directly to them by you. For older folks, if they're looking for less responsibility, if they're looking to pivot laterally to a different project, then you need to be able to support them and provide mentorship guidelines. I think a lot of organizations are expecting, you know, the older folks to provide mentorship, but then provide them no guidance on how to give mentorship. Maybe these people have never had mentors or have mentored a person before, and they don't know how to do it. So then you build out frameworks for them. You provide them the tools so it doesn't feel like they're doing all the work. I think a lot of people always end the meetings with, if you need any support, please let me know how I can support you. But a lot of people don't know what they don't know. They don't know that they need to do X, Y, and Z for their mentorship. So you need to provide them the tools, and then you need to ask them. You need to give them direction. Okay, if you have any questions on how to set up this meeting or what skills to introduce to this person, please let me know. Instead of just being general and saying, let me know how I can support you. Because when you just throw out, you know, certain words or phrases, it gives them an idea of what, I didn't even think of that. I didn't even know I had a question about that. So then that makes them want to ask that question. And again, it's like more communication. That's a really big thing, is like, do you have any questions for me? I always, when I ask that question, then just throw out phrases like, do you have any questions about, you know, this program, that program, how to work with people, how to send emails, blah, 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 blah. Because then that jogs something in that person's mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Another form of support.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. People don't know what they don't know. All right. Outstanding. All right, you got a lot of very good ideas.
I'm
like, I feel like a brain dump. It's outstanding.
I hope it's helpful.
It is.
Yeah.
Leave us with some inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, about what your organization can look like when you've got a successful, mm-hmm. you know, vibrant intergenerational people pipeline.
When you increase communication between everybody, they banter, they joke, they laugh, and they work together much more better. There's less friction when people have different ideas. They embrace each other's diverse methodologies a lot more. They appreciate each other's stories and where they came from. And they appreciate each other as human beings and not just as fellow coworkers. And when you can introduce that into your organization, people are people who are working together for the same mission. Productivity increases, your team retention increases, and you are accomplishing the objectives that you are setting out to do.
Arya Ma, founder and principal consultant at Lunera. It's spelled L-U-N-E-A-E-R-A. And I'm sure you can connect with Arya on LinkedIn.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, please connect with me. I love LinkedIn.
I'm going to. Don't turn me down now.
Yeah, I'll accept.
Ignore. All right. Arya Ma, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tony. Really appreciate being here and talking to you.
It's my pleasure. I learned a lot. And thank you for being with Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 25NTC, where we're sponsored by Heller Consulting, technology services for nonprofits.
Next week, it's our 750th show and 15th anniversary jubilee.
Woohoo! 15 years! 750 shows! What a milestone! Please be with us.
If you missed any part of this week's show,
I beseech you, find it at TonyMartinetti.com. And don't miss the 750th show.
Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. I'm your associate producer, Kate Martinetti. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy, and this music is by Scott Stein.
Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with us next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.